This is Edward October, host of October Pod on YouTube. Hear that jingle jingle? It could be Kris Kringle, or a home invader looking for an open window, a jilted lover looking for revenge, or a disgruntled co-worker hoping to spike your eggnog with arsenic. The girls of our true crime podcast are always on Santa's nice list, but the crimes they discuss are very naughty indeed. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Kim.
What day is this?
Sixth day. It's the sixth nightmare before Christmas.
Nightmare before Christmas.
I hope everybody's doing well. I hope you're out getting all their shopping done. I hope if it's done, you're getting everything wrapped so you can enjoy a nice lead up to Christmas and you don't have to rush around.
I've been wrapping as I get presents and I've never done that before and I kind of like it.
Well, good for you.
Mm-hmm, thanks.
Good for you. I haven't. I've got, as I'm sitting here, I see piles of stuff.
Nope. I wish I was getting piles of stuff for Christmas. Is any
you're
of that
getting,
for me?
You're just sitting around getting piles.
Piles. Oh, I know, girl.
You know, the kids are just so getting so older.
Old,
that they don't,
which is cool for.
They're teens. They don't really want. They don't really want anything fun. You know what I mean? They just want clothes.
Mm-hmm, I know.
Or yeah, it's just not fun. It was fun when they were little and you could buy all those fun toys that made a lot of noise. The ones that you just want to take out back and shoot after the first week or two that you've had them.
I love those days.
Or take the batteries out.
Yeah.
I miss them.
Those were the days.
Those were the days.
No.
But anyway. Let's get started. In this sixth episode of the 12 Nightmares Before Christmas, we are going to go back in time to 1967 to a small town called Lock Haven in Pennsylvania. Now, Lock Haven is the county seat of Clinton County. Population right now is just over 9,300. Back when this happened, I believe the population was about 11,000. And in 1967, one of the biggest employers was the Hammermill Paper Company. And the Hammermill is where today's horrific incident took place. So, 39-year-old, 6-foot-tall, 200-pound Leo Held was a nice, mild-mannered, church-going man. He was an avid hunter, and they said that he was quite the shot. Mm. And he was very involved in his community. He was a Boy Scout leader. He was on the school board. He always was going to church. And people would describe him as a, quote, quiet, peaceful man devoted to his family.
Uh-oh.
On the morning of October 23rd, 1967, Leo and his wife, Alda, had just done some laundry in their home in a small outskirt town of Lock Haven by the name of Langston. And it's about a 20-minute drive from Lock Haven. After the couple's four children went off to school, and Alda headed to her job at a plastics manufacturing company, Leo stuck a .45 caliber automatic pistol in the waistband of his pants and placed a .38 caliber revolver, in a shoulder holster. Now, then he put on his blue windbreaker, which easily concealed his weapons. He then got into his blue station wagon and drove to the Hammermill paper plant where he had worked as a lab tech for about 20 years.
Hmm.
Once he arrived at work, he waited inside the two doors of the Hammermill building. Now, you know, like in a mall, how you walk in the outside doors and then there's like a little foyer and then there's another two sets of doors that goes in. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the area. Okay. And this is all what people think happened.
Okay.
Just shortly before 8 a.m., 62-year-old Carmen Edwards, who was Leo's boss, entered the mill. Now, some people that worked at the plant described Carmen's as being very stern. He wasn't really well-liked, if you get my drift. He was also said to be antagonistic. He was sarcastic.
with any of the employees under him. Mm-hmm. In other words, not a great boss whatsoever.
No, not well liked.
I'm sure he got the job done, and I'm sure he was very professional, but the underlings weren't very pleased with him. While Carmen was walking in the building, Leo came up behind him and shot him in the back.
Ugh.
The bullet went straight through his heart and killed him immediately. After Carmen was down, Leo walked calmly to the laboratories and offices. You know how they usually have it separate from the mill.
Yeah.
Very methodically and calmly, ice cold, walked to these offices, and inside the very first lab sat 37-year-old lab assistant Elmer Weaver. Elmer had worked at Hammer Mill for 37 years, and Elmer's brother was married to Leo's sister. Leo, without a word, raised his gun and shot Elmer as he sat on his stool. Leo then calmly went to the next lab and killed another lab tech, 44-year-old Alan Jack Barrett Jr. Some would claim that Leo chased Jack around the lab tables while shooting at him. And there's a picture of the crime scene in this book that I'll talk about later, but papers are just everywhere. And thank God the pictures are in black and white, because you can just tell the place is just
terrible.
Bloodied.
Yeah.
Now, after Jack was killed, Leo shot 40-year-old Richard Dick Carter 5 times. Bullets tore through Dick's stomach, chest, neck, and right arm, leaving him in critical condition, but he would live. Unfortunately, Jack Barrett died on the scene. 47-year-old James Allen was walking out of the lab, not knowing what was going on, and he saw Leo and said, you know, what are you doing? Leo, without a word, shot him. Just shot him. And the bullets would leave wounds to his left arm and chest and left lung, the breastbone, and the diaphragm. He would be in the hospital for 3 weeks, but he would survive.
I don't think it occurs to you what's happening. And if you knew the person, so like if you and I were working together, let's say with somebody named Rodney or Trent, mm-hmm. and they came in and you'd be like, Rodney, what are you doing? Trent, what? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it would occur to you.
And
what
I'm
is
sure
taking
with
place.
With the bullets, not you always hear people after the fact with shootings or anything saying, mm-hmm. I had no idea what was going on. I heard it sounded a car was backfiring.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
being in a very busy plant.
Yeah, it was probably loud with the machines running.
It was
anyway.
Probably loud. People probably didn't even hear it. And at this point, nobody was even aware what was happening at all. It was all so quick. Like the first man, Carmen Edwards, it was only one bullet. Took him down. The rest would have multiple bullet wounds and be shot multiple times. But Carmen was the very first one, and he was the only one that had one bullet and shot at him into his body. Just, it's amazing. And this was, mass shootings weren't that common. I mean,
that's what I was thinking.
Even the term active shooter wasn't mm-hmm. a term for this kind of thing back in 67.
Mm-hmm.
So that is just recent. The active shooter situation is just it's always been around military use, but it's only until recently in modern times that the term active shooter is used for what's happening here. Leo then walked into the office of 32-year-old Richard Davenport. When Richard looked up to see who had entered the room, Leo, without making a sound again, raised his gun and fired, killing Richard.
Hmm.
Now, by this time, the paper mill knew that there was a man and with a gun in the building. And 27-year-old David Overdorf was searching for his wife. She also worked at the paper mill. And as you would find in most towns during these days, ones that have these cotton mills or paper plants or any kind of plants, it was a family affair, like your uncles and cousins and brothers mm-hmm. and sisters, and everybody worked there. So it's not uncommon that his wife would be working there.
Oh, yeah.
David Overdorf was searching for his wife, and he just wanted to make sure she was safe. They hadn't been married for very long. And as David entered the hallway to the offices, he ran face to face with Leo. Leo shot him, but he only got David in the thigh.
Ooh, yuck.
Leo started towards the main office area, and as he passed a hallway, Leo looked down and saw 31-year-old Donald Walden by the phone's operator's desk. Leo killed Donald by shooting the gun and putting bullets into his chest. Donald's wife, unfortunately, was in a nearby room when this happened. and the phone operator was safe. She hid under the desk. The last victim at the paper mill was Woodrow Woody Stoltz. Now, Woody was sitting at his desk when he heard a gunfire. He looked up just in time to see Leo raise his gun and pull the trigger. He shot Woody in the chest, abdomen, and right thigh, but Woody survived. Then, by 8:14, Leo walked out of the building. It took 18 minutes for Leo to calmly walk through the building, firing an estimated 30 shots to kill 5 colleagues and wound another 4.
Wow.
Leo surprised all of his victims. I mean, they had no idea Leo was on this rampage. He never said a word as he walked throughout the mill. He just methodically shot his victims one at a time. Only one person shouted that Leo had a gun. Otherwise, there was complete silence except for when the guns went off. Leo then left the hammer mill paper plant, and by freak coincidence, there was an electrical overload and the lights went out, cloaking the mill in darkness. It was just a surge, a power surge. The lights went out and there was complete blackout. And could you imagine the panic that set in?
Mm-mm.
They had no idea Leo was out of the building. They had no idea that it was even Leo as the gunman.
Mm-hmm. I'd be thinking the building's about to explode.
Exactly. Just pure and utter horror. During the 18 minutes when the shooting occurred, a mill worker by the name of Wayne Yon escaped the building. Now, he knew that Leo was the gunman, but like everyone else, he just didn't know why. When Wayne got out of the building, there was another man by the name of Ted Lobsher, which I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong, or Lobsher. Ted was standing outside and he saw Wayne and just yelled over, "Hey, do you know what's going on?" But before Wayne could even speak, he heard something behind him and it was Leo. Leo was standing right behind him. And Ted yelled, "Hey, Leo, what's going on over there?" And it said that Leo mumbled something like, "I don't know." But both men didn't hear what was actually said.
Was Leo pretending like he was with them, like it wasn't him?
Leo was just calm. They thought Leo said, "I don't know." Leo never looked in their direction, never did anything. He just put his hands in his pockets, got into a station wagon, and drove away.
Wow. Ooh.
And when he left, he headed straight towards the Lock Haven Airport. Leo arrived at the airport at approximately 8:20 a.m. and headed straight towards the offices. There, he found Geraldine Ram, who was the office secretary. Geraldine was Leo's neighbor, and she used to do a carpool with him, like ride to works and such, since they lived 20 minutes out of town, right? When he got into the office, Leo reached under his blazer and pulled out his .38 and began firing the pistol. Geraldine dove under her desk and protected herself with the desk, which was, thank God, that's what saved her life. But Leo kept firing the revolver until all 6 bullets were gone and he could just hear the clicks. But Leo never said a word the entire time. And in fact, the manager, Howard Graves, he didn't know what was going on. He thought Leo was in there playing a practical joke and like either shooting blanks or throwing firecrackers at Geraldine.
Not a funny joke, though, but
no,
I guess that's just what you think, right? Like you think
it's like you think it's a mannequin, right? You come across a body and you think it's a mannequin. Your mind doesn't work like that. But Howard was able to walk up to Leo and physically touch him and escort him out of the building.
That's why I think Leo, like he played it like he's an innocent person there just as they are.
I think Leo had a break, a mental break.
Yeah, he snapped. Yeah.
Right. But when Howard escorted him out, Leo didn't resist. I mean, he simply got into his car and left. And that whole incident took 3 minutes. And Geraldine was hit by 4 bullets. A bullet grazed her right temple. Another passed through her shoulder and neck. One hit her finger and the other one hit her left side. But she was fine. She survived. Now, by this time, the mill workers rushed to find a phone to call her families. And remember, no cell phones at this time. It was 1967. Hell, I think that the operator still had to actually physically connect lines to one another.
Yeah.
Right? Bell Telephone would later say that on this day, phone usage was up 8 times more than normal, causing all the lines to jam.
Why was it up higher? just because
people were calling to make sure they didn't know where Leo was going to go. They wanted to tell people that they were safe. I mean, people were.
I thought you meant prior
the
to
mill
this.
Workers. Okay. Yeah. The people were calling friends and relatives to check on them and then to tell them to stay away from Leo. I mean, duh, right? But they just kept getting a busy signal because all the phone lines were jammed. They couldn't do it. The Lock Haven Police Department and the Pennsylvania State Police had been called. When the local police were first told of the incident, they thought it was a joke. I mean, small town, really?
Right.
That's ha ha ha, funny.
Yeah, teenagers, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But then they heard all the screams in the background. Police Chief Domer Orndorff grabbed his firearm and Assistant Police Chief William Bill Ryan grabbed a can of tear gas and they headed off towards the mill. Pennsylvania State Police Trooper John Keeler met them at the gate and told them that the shooter had already been identified as Leo Held. So Chief Orndorff and Assistant Chief Bill Ryan headed out to see if they can find Leo. Clinton County Sheriff Jack Boyle got on the local radio station and pleaded with Leo, calling him by his name, saying, Leo, please just turn yourself in. Come to the county jail. Turn yourself in. It'll be okay. We'll get it situated, right?
Mm-hmm.
But nothing was heard from Leo. Mm-hmm. And the mill, of course, it was shut down. And the plastic factory where Leo's wife worked, they sent all the employees home. Everybody was afraid that Leo was going to go to where his family was.
Mm-hmm.
When Alda, his wife, found out what Leo had done, she collapsed and she had to be taken to the hospital. She just was in shock. And she hadn't suspected anything was wrong with Leo that morning at all. Everything was fine. It was a normal day. And to this day, she still doesn't know, nor she doesn't like to discuss what happened, which I don't really blame her. The Sugar Valley School, where Leah and Alda's children attended, were put on high alert. Someone had picked up the Held kids, and the rest of the student body was sent to the lowest floor of the school and instructed to stay away from all windows. The principal, janitor, and other male teachers rushed home to get firearms so they could stand guard in front of the school and protect those inside from Leo.
Wow. That would never happen today.
No, the police wouldn't let it. But this is a big hunting community in the middle of Pennsylvania.
I could still see it go down in a small town. Small. Like volunteer
small
police
town.
Department. Yeah.
Well, this police department only had 12 people.
Yeah.
Now, that's nothing for 11,000 people. That's what, barely over one per 1,000 people?
Yeah.
After Leo left the airport, he took back roads and he drove back to his house in Langston. But instead of going into his own home, Leo broke into his neighbors Floyd and Donald Quiggle's home. And this was at 8:52 a.m. 27-year-old Floyd and Donna Quiggle were still upstairs in bed since Floyd was a self-employed truck driver and didn't have any trip scheduled for that day. Also at home was their 5-year-old daughter. Leo simply walked upstairs to their bedroom, shot them with his .38 caliber revolver, and just as silent as he came in, turned and left without a word.
Wow.
Donna was shot first. A bullet would go into her spine and leave her partially paralyzed. Then he turned the gun on Floyd, and he shot him straight into the head, which instantly killed him. Leo went to Floyd's gun cases and took guns and ammunition. Luckily, the Quiggle's 5-year-old daughter wasn't harmed. She had been hiding under her bed. When a neighbor found her, the 5-year-old was crying into the phone saying, "Help me, Mommy and Daddy have been shot."
That's awful.
And yeah. Leo had just gotten into his front door when the police arrived. Assistant Chief Ryan, carrying his rifle, walked up to the door and knocked. Chief Orndorff walked to the side of the house. After Ryan knocked, Leo peeked through the windows. They have little curtains on the windows and the doors. He pushed back the little curtains, and Ryan could see that Leo still had his rifle holding it. All Leo did was stare at Ryan for a few seconds, and then he disappeared. And that's when Ryan called out that he was in the house. By this time, Leo thought he'd be smart and sneak out through the side door, and he started backing out because he thought that the police were going to go in the front door.
Mm-hmm.
But little did he know that Chief Orndorff was already out there right behind him. So Leo had his back to Chief Orndorff, but when he turned around, he saw the chief, and he automatically shot. Luckily, the chief wasn't hurt, but he did fire back, and Leo dropped his rifle because the bullet that the chief shot hit Leo in the left shoulder. And Chief Orndorff would later say, quote, "There was anger on his face, real anger, like he was angry at the world." Leo quickly started to run, and Chief Orndorff started to go into the front of the house to head him off, right? When the chief heard a shot of a rifle, it seemed that Ryan had gone into the house and through a back window shot Leo as he ran across the backyard. And Leo had been hit and in the leg, and his left thigh was shattered. That thigh bone?
Which, connected to your knee bone.
Yeah, which, woohoo, Assistant Chief Ryan, good shot, buddy. So Leo was lying on his back in the backyard, in his own backyard, by the way, and he was wounded, but he refused to give up. He still had his revolver, and he was just shooting at everyone and everything, just shooting. Shots were just going off. Police were trying to get Leo to just turn himself in, you know. They didn't want to kill him. They wanted to take him in alive. They said, you know, it would have been really easy to kill him then, but they just didn't want to do it. They wanted to talk to him. They wanted to see what's going on. They needed him alive. State Police Sergeant Joseph Heffernan yelled at Leo and he's to throw down his gun. And Leo screamed, "Oh yeah, come over and get it." Right? Then Leo's brother-in-law arrived at the house and just begged Leo to turn himself in. But Leo just pulled out another gun and started firing off more rounds.
Phew.
Luckily, a patrolman named Joe Sanders Jr. pulled up.
Joey Sanders, you go, boy.
Joe Sanders. And using one of a deer rifle that somebody just handed to him, it was like a neighbor's deer rifle or something, he was able to use that deer rifle and shoot Leo in the right wrist, which made him drop his gun.
Good.
But what does Leo do? He reaches over, grabs the gun with the other hand, and starts shooting.
Oh, my God.
He would not give up. And that's when Leo Sanders Jr. fired off a second shot. This time, it hit his left hand, rendering Leo useless. He couldn't shoot anymore.
Good. I can't believe they didn't take his head off.
They didn't want to kill him. I mean, it's different today, but
back then.
So Leo was laying there in the background in a bloody pile. And when he was taken into custody, police saw that Leo had filled his pockets with ammunition. And Chief Orndorff said, quote, "He intended to be it in for the long haul."
He sure did.
Leo was then taken by ambulance to Lock Haven Hospital, where the police patrolman, Joe Sanders Jr., like, served as a guard. And he was taken there to be treated. And they said that he never spoke on the ride to the hospital. All he did was moan the entire time, which
was good.
What was he good.
Moaning about? Because he was in
he
pain?
He was hurt. He was hurt. He was in pain. He was moaning.
Baby. He can dish it out, but he can't serve it. No, wait, he can dish it out, but he can't, whatever. You know the saying.
The motive for Leo Held's rampage on that sunny day in October?
Yeah, this is what I've been waiting for. What?
It was and never will be known.
What?
Leo was the last to be operated on that day at Lock Haven Hospital. All the other folks that he had injured or killed, or that were still alive, were treated before Leo was. Because it was a very small hospital. I think there's only two rooms there.
One's going to die. It's going to be him, right?
Exactly.
It's going to be me.
All of his other surviving victims were given priority, obviously.
As
Leo's surgery lasted for over 4 hours. And after the surgery, he never regained consciousness and he died 2 days later. They also thought that some of these men may have been promoted over him. Like he was up for a promotion with such and such and he got the promotion over him. I don't
that
know.
That happens all the time, though. You
all
don't
the
kill
time.
People for that.
There was
maybe
also talk. Yeah,
steal
go ahead.
Their sodas out of the lounge.
Their lunches, or you trip them as they walk by. Or,
exactly.
Yeah, but you get over it, right?
Totally.
There was also talk that the mill would be laying off people. But Leo had been there for 20 years, so he most likely would not have lost his job.
No, he lost.
His doctor later noted that Leo had shown paranoid tendencies for like the year prior.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, quote, he felt that the people at the plant were talking about him, end quote.
And they might have.
They
but
might
guess
have,
what?
But
that happens all the time.
No.
You know?
Yep. Geraldine Ram had told Leo a few weeks before that she no longer wanted to ride in the carpool with him because he, quote, drove like a maniac. And she was the last one that didn't want to ride with him. And when she called to tell him that, she said that he was quiet for a bit. And he said, quote, if that's the way you want it, and then hung up. And he avoided her after that.
Like, he
never spoke
her?
With her. She was the one that dove under the desk, and uh-huh. she was hit with 4 bullets, but survived.
Man, he just holds a grudge.
I know. And then as for the Quiggles, the two neighbors were actually fairly good friends, I guess, and they got along. But the only two things people could think about were, one, Floyd, who drove his semi-truck, would come home late at like 11 p.m. on Fridays, mm-hmm. and he would park the tractor trailer in the alley across from Leo's house. And sometimes he would gun the engine late at night, or he'd leave the engine idling for a while.
Yeah.
Right? And that would annoy Leo to no end.
We had a neighbor that did that.
And Leo would also get incensed when Floyd would burn leaves in his yard because Leo hated the smoke. So, of course, none of these are good enough reasons to kill. 7 people were injured that day, and 6 people actually died. But yeah. And I want to do a huge, big shout out to Don Sarvey, S-A-R-V-E-Y. He wrote the book Day of Rampage, Model Citizen Turns Cold-Blooded Killer in a Pennsylvania Small Town. He actually was the one, he compiled all these old newspaper articles from like Time and The Express, which is the newspaper that's in the area of Lock Haven.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the quotes that I had said in this podcast, in this episode, were from him. It was his own blood, sweat, and tears. He actually went and spoke with all the survivors in like 2011, and he interviewed them, or anyone that would talk, by the way. And so I just want to make sure that he gets credit, and I will link where you can purchase the book in the show notes because it goes on a little bit further. I just gave you the highlights mm-hmm. since it is our shortened version of what happened. But in that book, you can also see the pictures of the aftermath of the lab with all the bloody everywhere.
Ugh,
gross. Just
awful. That is awful.
But anyway, yeah, he did a really nice job on the book, and so kudos to him.
Well, I was just going to say it's so sad now because these happen all the time.
It
like
does.
You don't even flinch anymore. And that is
no.
a sad, sad state.
Yeah.
Honestly.
And I think it was just until I was reading this and numbers don't sit well in my head, but I think they said it was the late, maybe 2000 or maybe I forget, but it was only until recently that they started using the term active shooter
mm-hmm.
because it before that it was like a military drill.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now it has become like a common vernacular. It's in our common vernacular now. Yeah.
Yep.
It's a sad state, actually. But this is actually what I read, one of the top workplace
shootings,
mass violence to happen.
Yeah. I could see that. I just don't even, whew, that would be.
No, and to have like, you know, somebody's out to get you, and there's a shooter in the premise, and then like the lights go out. That just, you know, mm-hmm. and of course, back then, people are thinking that he shot the lights out and he's probably going to come back and shoot
mm-hmm.
them and
yeah.
kill them. I mean, they must have been terrified. Those poor people, just absolutely terrified that they're never going to see their kids.
I can't.
Or their family.
I can't even. It's
can't
terrible.
Imagine.
Well, Jen, that was pretty darn interesting. And
yeah.
you know what? Tomorrow is day 7. 7.
It is
7.
Day 7.
Where I believe that will be me, and I believe I'm bringing you a California serial killer, if I'm
California.
Not mistaken.
California. Awesome.
So, yeah. Until then, Jen, remember, lock your doors.
Keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love you, and get those packages wrapped. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Jen. For more information about this episode, as well as all other sources, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by the hosts, Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. You can reach Nico at wetalkofdreams.com. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from Octoberpod VHS. You can find all of his great works on YouTube. Please make sure to like and subscribe to our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter with the handle at Our True Crime Pod. You can also email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. We would also at this time like to thank our patrons. We would be so lost without you. Thank you so much. And if you would like to help support the show, you can check us out on patreon.com/ourtruecrimepodcast. You can also show your support by leaving a 5-star review on Apple or simply just tell your friends about us. It's that easy. Love ya.
Sixth day. It's the sixth nightmare before Christmas.
Nightmare before Christmas.
I hope everybody's doing well. I hope you're out, got your fit.
Got your Fitbit on, counting your steps. Is that what you're going to say? Because that's what it sounded like you were going to say.
Oh. I was going to say in a shoulder holder.
Ugh.
Oh, no, in a shoulder holster.
Holster. I like shoulder holder better. But that's what a bra is, you know, over the shoulder boulder holder.
Over the shoulder boulder holder. Yep.
That's what I said.
That's when Police Chief Domer.
Domer Amigatinista Roboto. Domo.
I'm not even going to put the names.
Okay. How do you spell Domo? Domer.
Did I already say Orndorff? Did I get the name screwed up on this one again? Hold on. Sorry.
Domer Amadomp.
Because it's a German. It's all German and...
You didn't take German
No,
in high school?
Overdorf. This is Orndorff.
Okay.
Chief Orndorff walked to the side of the house. I know it's a hard name to say.
I keep thinking Orenthal, like Orenthal James.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's also
die?
Talk that...
Like, how do they not know? He just didn't say?
Well, I... shit. I did. I forgot that.
You Hold forgot on. What?
But add this part, Leah, or Leo. Add this part, Nico. I forgot a small... I forgot, like, two sentences.
He died.
Three sentences. Okay. Leo was... So, with Leo, I'm
Jesus.
Telling you, we're talking.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, okay, so add this. Leo was, well, we can talk it again. So,
I would have liked to have known that.
I know. Should I do the other part? Sorry. Should I do the other part again, or should we just, see, this is why we can't do more than, you know, two episodes, because I'll totally fuck up the other ones.
Oh.
So, Nico, if you could just add that where it's supposed to go, that'd be awesome.
I cannot believe you did. I was like,
I'm tired.
What? He never talked?
Trust me, it
he
was
never
only
said a word?
It was only like a couple sentences, and I'd already scrolled up when I talked. I guess my finger accidentally hit the pad screen, and it went up a little bit.
He died.
He did die. But you know what? Who cares? No, I'm sure. Somebody does, but,
oh, but I mean, it's an important part of the story when you go into the part about and they'll never know.
I know.
Why?
And they'll never know. They don't. They still don't. They just know it was premeditated. All right. Calm down.
No. I bet you he did it in the right order, too.
I'm sure he did. Hey, it happens. God forbid you ever mess up, Camille. I know you're perfect. Like our last episode where you kind of forgot to write the ending.
Yes.
And the episode was 28 minutes long because I didn't write the ending.
Oh, shoot. That was good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, good times.
It's just details.
Can just fix it. Details. It was only a little bit of detail, and Nico can fix that in post. So, hey, I'm tired. I've been dealing with a lot of shit.
I thought I missed it. That's why it's funny. I was like, you know, your head, my mind. I was like, did they cut out his tongue? Did he lose his ability to speak?
No.
Like,
Nope, he did.